Well, it looks like all the members that are probably going to be present are present. We'll call the meeting of the Legacy and Budget Stabilization Fund Advisory Board together. First, we'll have the roll call.
Representative Chairman Kempinick?
Here.
Representative Kreit?
Here.
Senators, Vice Chair Klein? Dawson Rod?
Here.
Mr. Hardmire?
Here.
Mr. Morissette?
Here.
Mr. Rauschenberger?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Okay, committee. The consideration of the minutes of the March 20th, 2019 meeting. Do we need approval on that? You approve? Eric approved. Second?
Second.
Second, Gary. Any discussion? Do we need a roll call? Voice vote. We'll have a voice vote on that. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, the next agenda is the choosing of the chairman and the vice chairman of the committee. This is kind of a unique committee in that we have a mixture of legislators, and so it we need to vote on it. And so I guess,
chairman,
go ahead.
We'll start out with the chairman, and I'll nominate Keith Kempinich for chairman of the Legacy Budget Stabilization Fund Advisory Board.
Second. Any other nominations?
Chairman, I move nomination cease. Cast the ballot for Keith Kempinich.
All in. Let's see, we need a roll call on that one, don't we? Okay, clerk will take the roll on that.
Representatives, Chairman Kempinick?
Yes.
Representative Kreit?
Yep.
Senators, Vice Chair Klein, Senator Dawson Rod?
Yes.
Mr. Hardmire?
Yes.
Mr. Morissette?
Yes.
Mr. Rauschenberger?
Yes.
Well, thank you, committee, I think.
Hell of a campaign.
Okay, it was moved for Jerry Klein as vice chair. Is there a second?
Second.
Any other nominations? Do we got to say it three times, or do we? We're good. Yeah, okay, clerk will take the roll on that.
Representative Chair Kempinick?
Yes.
Representative Kreit?
Yes.
Senators Klein, Senator Dawson Rod?
Yes.
Mr. Hardmire?
Yes.
Mr. Morissette?
Yes.
Mr. Rauschenberger?
Yes.
Okay, committee. Well, we got that formality out of the road. I guess the next item we got up is the process of during the session put a bill to have members of this committee serve on the investment board, and it's a non-voting member, and basically it was my idea that we'd have it'd be more of an informational, but the members that would go would actually give a report back to the committee on what went on to during their investment meeting, and just kind of to, you know, keep things, because of the way this is working with the Legacy Fund and the Budget Stabilization Fund, it is getting where information, and that was my feeling, and it was more so on the legislative part of it, that if we had to make a trip to Bismarck was to get compensated to do it. So that's basically the underlying reason to do that, and but it was for information and to keep this committee apprised of what the conversations are. And I think there is, you know, the legacy fund, there's meetings that are probably more prevalent to the legacy fund than others and stuff on it. But I was just going to open this up for discussion on how we want to go about doing this, about the members participating. And it was my idea that we'd have start out, and I can take the first one, and then just start out that another member would take the next month and after, and so on and so on. And I think that we'd need to though get kind of a list together so we know who is responsible for being at that meeting. And it's my understanding, I there's 10, I think, was indicated. And I don't know if you have, unless you have a special meeting or something, I suppose, on it. But there'd be basically during the biennium be 20 meetings. So, and I know one member isn't going to go to 20 meetings. But it was my idea to get the membership of this committee a little more active in the investment board conversations. So that's kind of the idea. Mr. Hartmann.
You know, I like the idea of maybe rotating this, but I think every meeting is too often. I would say to get a little bit of feel for the committee, that kind of works, maybe a little bit longer of a rotation period than a meeting, like maybe half a year or something would be.
Per member, you mean? Or yeah. Per member? Or,
yeah,
or what?
If that's what you were saying, rotating every meeting, I thought it.
Well, it was, yeah. Okay, you don't think you'll get enough of a feel for what the...
whoever serves on that should serve for a number of meetings before it's rotating. I think one can get a good feeling and an impact.
Come in. Go ahead.
I don't have a copy of the bill here, but Sheila, was there... any type of direction in the bill? I don't remember. I know I signed off on it, but did it say that would be a committee member would meet every month at the advisory, or did it leave it wide open?
Yeah, I can get it up too.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it just indicated that the board shall develop a process to select a member of the board to serve on the state investment board in a non-voting capacity. It did not indicate how the process should work. It just left it up to this advisory board to determine that.
Well, what I would like to see a schedule developed, you know, if it's monthly or every other month, or what that a member would attend. Say for, you know, for a year, and that way, you know, a person could schedule, you know, if you're assigned or if you can't make that time, you could, you know, contact one of the other members, you know, to take your place on meeting on that committee. That's what I'd like to see. I guess it's up to us then to decide, you know, if we want to do it monthly or if we want to do it every other month, or how we want to set it up. But that's what I'd like to see happen.
Any other discussion? Go ahead, Senator Dotson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I probably feel like the other members of the committee that the idea of developing a better understanding of the State Investment Board for our committee it's a good idea to have one of us there. It seems like maybe one meeting, you know, each of us having one meeting at a time would get to be too infrequent. You wouldn't get an idea of the sort of the continuing process that they're involved in. On the other hand, one member every, you know, like 6 months at a time probably seems a little bit, there'll be some of the members that will be able to perform this function and some that won't. I guess I'm leaning toward like quarterly, one member attending for a 3-month period, and then we'd rotate to the next member for a 3-month period, that would give probably over the biennium a chance for just about everybody, maybe not everybody. And I think the idea that if you can't make a meeting, that you could contact another member. And it would be good to get that feedback and when we start our meetings, whenever we do meet, to have a report from our own membership here on what's going on the State Investment Board. So I guess that's all I'm leaning is if you could do it quarterly and have one of us do it, be able to be there. It's my thought. I guess it.
Okay. No, well, that's what we need to figure out. Go ahead, Mr. Rauschenberger.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree that I think something with a little bit longer term, maybe a quarterly or semi-annually where you could attend 2 to 4, maybe 5 meetings in that time frame. Again, if it's 10 times a year, that'd be about the estimation. Get a good feel for what that trend is that quarter or half year. I think would be better feedback for that person. That person learn a little more and be able to transition to the next person. And it would get almost everybody a chance to be on there. So I would lean towards that too, not necessarily every meeting we'd rotate. I just think that would be a little, okay, little too much turnover as far as getting a feel for how the board works.
Okay. Mr. Hardmar, go ahead.
Chairman, if you're ready, I'd make a motion that we establish the selection process to be quarterly and have the chairman select the member that would be for that quarter. So I'd make that motion.
Okay. There's a motion on the table. Second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? No, I think committee, that sounds, I was just thinking this through, that means that two people, you know, because we meet semi-annually and stuff, so two people would give a report to this committee, and then it might, yeah, that probably wouldn't probably be more. And then I think what one of the things is, too, is that in the past, and I don't know what, well, we can ask the investment board when they get up here, but they've had that Callan College and stuff in the past, and I know we've funded, you know, well, people that live in Bismarck, it isn't quite as big of a deal, but I know the legislators and stuff we've provided to come into that meeting. And I think, you know, the more knowledgeable this board is, the better. And that's what kind of the intent was on it. So I don't have a problem with doing that. And I think that it is, and like I said, there's probably some meetings are more pertinent to this committee than other meetings, but I think it gives an overall, it probably would give an overall feel of the how the process and the conversation goes. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Any other discussion? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good idea. I think doing quarterly makes sense, and if we find that it's maybe not enough meetings, we could always, it seems like the legislation is flexible enough. Next time we meet, we go, or even next year, we change it to semi-annual to have a little more permanency,
yeah,
a little more continuity. And my one question would be, just purely for process-wise, in that quarter, if a person from this, the designee that you would set, you know, in the rotation couldn't go, how does the replacement get selected? That would be one process question I have is, does, yep, the person who can't go find the replacement, or do we need to have you find the replacement?
Well, I think, and that was one of the, you know, things that got brought up, and I know it was discussed about was this a legislative initiative, or, but I thought, you know, I was thinking that this would be a board initiative, not a legislative, and what I was kind of thinking of is that we'd have one of you three gentlemen would probably be the default because you're in Bismarck and stuff on it. So if there wasn't somebody would be able to make it, I mean, they'd have to give you more than a day notice. But but I was kind of thinking that that's how we'd work that, you know, work that.
Is well, you could.
Or I could be the default too, or I can, yeah, or, you know, yeah, or ask one of you. So it isn't, I figured out of 3 or 4 people that could go at whatever notice, we could work around the not being able to attend the meeting. And because that is frequent, you know, I mean, and so that was the big issue. Go ahead, Griffin.
Yeah. You know, under usual circumstances on interim committees, you know, if you can't make it, you'll let the chairman know. And I would think we'd want to follow the same procedure. And, if you, as the individual, I can go probably talk to another member and they could attend, you know, that we could let Keith know that, and if that's what
he... Yeah, as long as we get continuity and you know, since we're doing this, we want to make sure that we can follow through on it. I guess that's my biggest thing, is that it is, so. Any other discussion? Well, with that, I guess we need a roll call vote on this, too, so. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Chairman Kempinick?
Yes.
Representative Kreit?
Yes.
Senators Vice Chair Klein? Senator Dotsenrod?
Yes.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
Yes.
Mr. Morissette?
Yes.
Mr. Rauschenberger?
Yes.
Okay, well, now I'll have to figure out who to... Well, what I thought I'd do, well, no, what I thought I'd do is I'll take the first go at it and see how this works, and then we'll have the conversation, and yeah, we'll have, what I'm kind of thinking of is that we could have that, and then we can either Joe or Jerry go next, whatever, yeah, and I was hoping Jerry'd be here, but I think that's how we'll start this out and then see how it works, and then go from there is what we'll do. So the next go around here, we'll all start it out, and then I'll give somebody a ring, but it'd probably be Jerry or Joe. That'll probably be the next go around, and then we'll have our next meeting and then see how it works out, and then go from there. So, okay, committee. Well, we get to the next one is this is kind of a hurry up, but I think that we're going to just dovetail off of basically our March meeting is what I'm kind of under the understanding on. So, Dave, I guess, have at her.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Dave Hunter. I serve as Executive Director and Chief Investment Officer for the Retirement Investment Office. To my right is Darren Schull, serves as Deputy Chief Investment Officer. I've served in this capacity for about 5.5 years. I think Darren served as deputy for about 7.5 years. Just to follow on, just real briefly, so there are 10 state investment board meetings a year. They're on the fourth Friday of every month, with the exception of June and December. So the next state investment board meeting that is scheduled, I believe, is for July 26th, and then also in August and September. I think it's good to do it on a quarterly basis because every quarter we do a quarterly performance review with council. We do a deep dive into performance attribution and gives a good feel. And then the other meetings are supplementary. We're adding new managers or looking over governance process. So just as a aside. Without further ado, I'll speak to the budget stabilization fund. On page 4 of the presentation shows the asset allocation. It's 100% effectively short-term fixed income. As of March 31st, 2019, had close to about $117 million in the budget stabilization fund. On page 5, we have the performance for the 1-, 3-, and 5-year periods ended March 31st, 2019. For the 1 year ended, we earned 3.13%, surpassing our performance benchmark by about 0.11%. Over the last 5 years, earned a return of about 1.64%, generating an excess return of about 0.48%. So nice overall performance. Obviously, during the past few years, there's been a significant increase in the Fed funds rates, which is driving up short-term rates. That's why you see a significant increase in the short-term investment rates that we've earned in more recent years than in the past. If you flip to the next page, you can actually see a history of the Fed funds rate going back to 1970, and you can see in a kind of inset is the Fed funds target rate was increased 25 basis points in December of 2015 and 2016, again March, June, and December of 2017, and then 4 times in 2018. The most recent announcements by the Fed chairman seems to indicate that there's more likely going to be a reduction, perhaps to 25 to 50 basis points going forward, so we're going to have a downward pressure on the rates going in the near term. I'll pause for a second.
Dave,
yes.
Question. With like the Fed fund rates and the bond rate, they don't follow each other, do they? Because I see the bonds are dropping. You know, what's happening?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so the Fed funds has an impact in the short-term Fed funds overnight rate, and that's what drives a lot of factors. But more importantly, probably over the long term, is what's going on in the economy or with perhaps global trade wars or geopolitical risks or perhaps outright war, in which you see differences in the long-term rate. So over the past That's just, if you flip to the next slide, just I think this helps to illustrate the Treasury yield curve. And on the right-hand side of the page, the top line in blue, if you can see that, that was, if you look at, there's 0, 5, 10, 15, look at the 10-year. So at the 10-year back in September, which is what that blue chart represents, that blue line represents, was actually up over 3%. The 10-year Treasury was up over 3%. In the past week, the 10-year Treasury dropped below 2%.
Yeah.
So that's a huge, more than 100 basis point decline. And that's just a function of kind of the economic uncertainty, the slowing global growth, perhaps the trade war impacts, the greater economic uncertainty that we're understanding. That also perhaps plays into perhaps why the Fed chairman will consider a 25 to 50 basis point rate cut at the next meeting, but all to be determined.
Okay. Continue. Any other questions? Mr. Erdmeyer.
And I don't mean to get out ahead of this, but so the end of the biennium is coming up here in the next few days. What is the thought in terms of the size of the budget stabilization next month after everything is washed through?
Darren, do you?
Mr.
Chair, members, Joe, do you have a better feel for that number? I know Connie has it from a cash flow perspective, but I apologize, our Chief Financial Officer is not here today.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I do. I'm actually looking at the handout that I will present to the budget section. And the estimate at the time that you finalized the legislative forecast in March was about $285 million that would transfer to the budget stabilization fund. We've been exceeding the general fund revenue forecast for the past few months. When that March forecast was adopted, we didn't have actuals for February yet, so now we have actuals for February, March, April, and May. So we got 4 months of actuals with about $50 million ahead of forecast. So just based on that, that number would go up to like $337 million. And then based on what Mr. Hunter reports next regarding the budget stabilization or the legacy earnings, you know, that legislative forecast assumed 300, if that's 450 or something like that, that would be another $150 million on top of that. So if you add those things together, still not knowing what our June revenues might be, and just assuming that they meet forecast, we would have a transfer into the budget stabilization of potentially around $500 million.
Yep. That's what I was saying.
Mr. Chairman. Go ahead. Just remind me again: does the budget stabilization have a cap?
Yes.
And that is
700 and something.
Mr. Chairman, it's about $725 million. It's based on 15% of next biennium's appropriations.
Okay. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Very good. The next couple of pages give relative performance attribution for the budget stabilization fund. Again, we've been fortunate to beat our benchmarks by 11 basis points in the past year and about 49 basis points over the last 5 years. So without further discussion, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to proceed to discuss the legacy fund update if you so desire.
Any other questions or comments on the budget stabilization fund? One thing I do have on this, and since we're getting a large amount so early in this process, is there anything we can do as far as helping our earnings in this fund? I know we've had this conversation before because we treat it like cash, basically. But I was wondering if there's something, you know, because we're hitting this early, and in the earliest it could ever be attached to, well, it could be attached tomorrow, I suppose, but is there anything, you know, it'll probably be 2 years out before this would be, is there anything we can do in that two-year period to do better on returns on this, since we're going to hit some large numbers fairly quickly and for a longer period of time than what, just something, we don't need to do it today, but just a thought process of look at this committee.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So we've been fortunate, if you look at the slide, right, so with the short-term rates going up in recent years, with the Fed funds rate in particular going up, we've been able to increase from about a 1.64% annual rate of return 5 years ago up to about 3.1. We're facing headwinds now with what's happening on with the short-term rates. So could the State Investment Board and then the Retirement Investment Office stuff take a look back and say maybe there's something a little bit more longer term that we could do? But it's a function of the rate environment. We actually have an inverted yield curve between the short-term rates and the 10-year rate at this point in time, okay, are very close to it. And because, yeah, of that, it makes it a little bit more challenging now more than ever to do that. Yeah. If it was back in September, when the 10-year was actually at or above 3%, it actually would have been a little bit easier to extend duration in order, and to lock in some rates. But we can take, yeah, it under consideration. Darren and I can work with Callan and the Retirement Investment, yeah, Office staff and the State Investment Board to come back and say, here's a potential opportunity to perhaps get a little bit more yield into the Budget Stabilization Fund going forward. But realizing it is truly a rainy day fund.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree. It just, like I said, it is early, you know, it's one thing, you know, and I mean, it's one thing when it was basically zero here a year ago or a little over, and now we're looking at a large, you know, I was just thinking, yeah, and just what our options would be or what we could do, I guess, on it. So that was all I just thought, bring it up.
Understood. So,
anything else, committee? Okay, let's move forward there. Yeah, we're going to run out of time.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly on the legacy fund, on page 11 is the statement in net position and changes in net position as of March 31st. It's a little stale data, but I just want to emphasize our data is publicly available. It's out on our website. It's updated on a monthly basis. If you flip to the next slide, just a brief update on the members of the State Investment Board. It includes 11 board members, including Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford as chairman, Rob Leck as vice chairman, Chief Deputy Attorney Troy Seibel as parliamentarian, Treasurer Kelly Smith is actually our longest serving board member. We also include Insurance Commissioner John Gottfried, WSI Director Brian Klipfel, Land Commissioner Jody Smith, TFFR Representative Tony Gummeringer and Mel Olson, in addition to PERS representatives Yvonne Smith and Adam Miller. And again, on all of our website, it's all public. We have all of our board meeting materials, all of our meeting dates, all of our governance manuals, all of our audit materials. And we were fortunate last year to receive an award to being ranked a 10 out of 10 from Transparency. It's as high as a ranking as you can get. It's consistent with the Alaska Permanent Fund. There's only two U.S. sovereign wealth funds that have it. So I just want to briefly just highlight that. Page 14 just kind of highlights the asset allocation transition that we've done between August 2013 and January 31st, 2015. So when we're looking at five-year numbers, I just want people to realize we weren't 100% invested in the current asset allocation of 50% equity, 35% fixed income, and 15% real assets. That was not fully allocated until January 31st, 2015. If you look at page 15, it's our asset allocation as of March 31st. We're generally within 1% of our targets for U.S. large cap, U.S. small cap, international equity, domestic fixed income, et cetera. The only area we're a little bit higher than we normally would be is in the cash and cash equivalents. If you could see that, it's actually at 1.6%. And again, that was in advance of knowing that we're going to do a significant transfer to the general fund via the treasurer's office on or about July 26th or thereabouts. So with that in mind, we're kind of parking a little bit more cash there until we actually do the transfer. So it's a little bit off from higher in cash than we would normally be. I'll just pause for a second on that point.
Any questions, committee? Right now you've got $100 million you've been carrying on the cash side?
Technically, that was as of March 31, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so we're well over $200 million.
That's what I was kind of – and that is, are you treating that like the budget stabilization fund then, just putting it in short-term
until
it comes?
Yes, okay. It's short-term. It is earning a return, but it is a shorter-term return. But listen, okay, if Mark were correct, it would be a wonderful investment to have because it would retain –
yep,
it's preserved value. Okay. And we're not driving transaction costs up by pushing money into equities and then having to pull it out real quick.
Okay. Any other questions, committee? Okay, go ahead, Dave.
Good. So on page 17, we have the performance of the legacy fund for the 1, 3, and 5 year periods ended March 31st, 2009. The most recent year, year ended March 31st, 2019, was a little bit more challenged, only earned about 2.58% with the market correction that happened in the fourth quarter. More importantly, over the 3 and 5 year period ended, we've generated an excess return of about 65 basis points or more. For the 3 years ended March 31st, 2019, which is when we've actually had a full asset allocation, we generated a net investment return of 7.59%, exceeding our policy benchmarks by about 0.71%. And then for the 5 years ended March 31st, 2019, again, that does not include a 100% period of our current asset allocation, we actually had a net investment return of a little under 5.6%, again, beating our benchmarks by about 2/3 of a percent, and do it on a very risk-controlled controlled basis. We're very close to our target risk allocation, 6.5 versus 6.5%, and generating nice positive risk-adjusted excess return of about 29 bps.
See, and that's the life of the fund, basically, what you're, this, and that is, because that first couple years was an interesting, let's put it that way, and then...
It was 100% short-term fixed income. So in 100% short-term fixed income, you're probably losing if against inflation. So now we're doing better than inflation and creating. So for the 5 years ending March 31st, 2019, we've actually generated about $100 million of incremental income from the fund over the benchmarks, which is nice. I wanted to make the state invest, or excuse me, I want to make the Legacy Fund Advisory Board aware that we actually do have one manager on our watch list. It's LSV. It's one of our largest equity managers. They've done very well for us over the long term, but they're a deep value large cap equity manager, and they have been challenged in the past 12 to 18 months. We have them on watch. Doesn't mean we're going to replace them, just mean we're going to monitor them even a little bit more closely. If you flipped, I've also included some performance details over a longer period of time. So if you have to look at page 21 in the materials, so this looks at international equity returns in which LSV is included. It's a large international equity manager for us. You could see for the five-year periods ended March 31st, 2019, we're generally performing pretty well. Highlighted in the green chart, our international equity is actually right in the top quartile at the 25th percentile. If you look at fixed income, we're in the second percentile, so top 2%. Domestic equity, we're in the top 16%. Real estate, we're in the top 12%. So overall, things are going good over the last 5 years, but a little bit more challenged in the past year because we have a manager that is a deep value that is a little bit out of favor, but has always done well for us over the long term, as demonstrated.
How much are we into when you?
We have about $1.5 billion with LSV across three different strategies. It's in the insurance trust, legacy fund, in addition to the pension trust.
Okay, and that's broad. I mean, it's domestic and
it's
international.
It's U.S. and international. Yes. And it's a deep value has been, value has been out of favor, deep value probably more so. Over the long term, they've generated wonderful excess return. We've been doing business with them for 25 years. When we actually first hired them back in 1989, 90, they had a really poor period of underperformance and came roaring back. They'll go through a period of a year or two of underperformance and then more than make up for it. So having said that, because it's such a sizable manager, this is the reason why we put them on watch.
Yeah, well, that's what one thing, if it was a couple hundred million.
It's a couple hundred million, but
it's 101.4.
But after the last state investment board meeting, Darren and I met with the folks at LSV. I met with them in Chicago. Darren was on a conference call with them just to make sure. They're staying true to the course, but having said that, we will continue to monitor them closely. It's not uncommon to have managers on watch lists. We've been fortunate that we've actually had no managers on watch lists for quite some time. So.
Okay. Yeah, well, keep us informed on that.
Will do. Mr. Chairman, there's always a request to provide an update on investment expenses and fees. It's a little bit premature for us to do it for fiscal 2019 because we're not quite there to June 30th yet, and it takes generally about 3 months for us to close our books from an audited standpoint. But just again, if you look at page 23, you can see that we've generally had a nice downward trend in fees. In fiscal year 2017, we paid about 0.34% in overall investment management fees for our managers, and actually we're able to reduce it to about 0.31% on page 23 for the fiscal year end of 2018. So the next time Darren and I present to the advisory board, we will provide an update for fiscal year 2019. I'm sure it will be very comparable to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, committee, Mr. Hardmeyer.
Dave, the overall return expectation or goal for the legacy fund, what should I be looking at here?
That really is, so a long-term target, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hardmeyer, the long-term assumed rate of return expectation is about 6%. It's a little under 6%, actually. 6%. But that's over like a 10, 20-year period. When we look at performance attribution to say how we think we're doing as a selector of investment managers, we have to say, what is the market doing, right? So obviously there's going to be point in times when over a year the equity markets are going to decline by 10%. And if we only decline by 9%, we're going to feel pretty good. Obviously it's even worse when comparing it to your long-term target excess return. But the long-term answer, the short is 6%. Very good.
Yeah, and committee, you know, and that's been always one of the things I think since we've started, you know, is how do you play defense on this, you know, and still gain something? I think that was a conversation early on that were members that were on the committee early on was, you know, you can get too careful where you don't earn anything, and basically if you can't, as my thinking in the past, if you can't beat 2%, you might as well spend the money today. And so it becomes that conversation of where, you know, how, and that's been one of the things is how do we, because you know this thing isn't going to always keep going up, and then how do you handle the downturns, or how do you play defense on what you do have, hang on to what you do have, and that's where I think, you know, that's becomes, and that's probably what we're seeing with that investment with that LSD manager, is that when, because you know this is going to, anybody that, this ebbs and flows, and so it's, so that's one of the things, it's just we don't want to be on the ebb as you know, as deep as the flow. So I think that's what kind of the goal is. So
right, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So back in May of 2018, we had Callan come in, provide a asset allocation study, and we reaffirmed the 50% equity, 35% fixed income. It's a pretty significant asset allocation of fixed income, and 15% real assets. So a nice diversified overall structure, and it should serve us well.
Well, I see some of the large funds though have pulled back on the equities and stuff too. You know, I've seen now they've reallocated some of their, and they're coming back to kind of where we were. You know, we probably should have been a little more aggressive here a couple years ago, but that's neither here nor there. And but now I see they're coming back more into where this fund is kind of allocated at, because that's what we want.
That's what we did with our asset allocation study, kind of reaffirmed the overall approach and risk profile, and it has served us well. So,
any questions, committee? Go ahead, Dave.
So, Mr. Chairman, this page 24, is a roll forward of the legacy fund earnings and deposits from inception to date. Just to touch on a few key high points, so total deposits of close to $4 billion through 2017. If you life-to-date totals, this is as of April 30th, are up over $5 billion is deposits in the legacy fund. We've actually had inception-to-date net earnings, not net earnings as defined by North Dakota Century Code, but net earnings from an accounting perspective. They have exceeded $1.3 billion since inception, and actually exceeded over $600 million. That would be the 22 months ended April 30th, 2019. Ending net position is approaching $6.4 billion, $6.389 billion to be more precise. The last column I think is where most people kind of focus. Transferable earnings through April 30th, 2019, were a little under $464 million. Based upon the latest estimates that we have, working with Darren and Connie Flanagan in our office, who is our chief financial officer, we think it's going to be about $454 million. So we gave back a little bit of our income back in May. So about $454 million is the most recent estimate we have for the 23 months ended May 31st, 2019.
So, and Dave, we won't... Well, no, we got the 200 because we got to meet that. But basically September is when the books will be finalized and stuff then?
That is correct. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so we are audited financial. We actually don't technically, the State Investment Board will not accept the audited financial statements generally until November, but we have fairly well cooked or baked or know the terrible choice.
Yeah, we don't want to say cooked the books.
Yeah. I apologize for that. I'm a CPA, so for me to say this is terrible. We have locked down our numbers of solidly already, but by the time we get to September, we're in very good shape. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Mr. Chairman, is that when the money, the Cook money, gets transferred over?
I might hear about this more than
once. To the general fund in September? Is that the actual, you know, run?
Well, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, the transfer to the general fund will be sometime in the month of July, and it'll be applied back to June. So the month of July stays open on the books through the 26th, I believe. So it'll be sometime in that period when we'll, those earnings will be quantified and transferred to the general fund.
But see, technically, and this is going back to conversations with the previous OMB director, you don't use them unless it's numbers that are solid. You know, you'd never use something that was an estimate as far as putting it in. So until this is going to be in July, you know, technically by law it'll transfer over, but we won't know for sure. We know the $200 million is going to be there because that needed to be for this for June, or for this biennium that we're currently in right now, finishing up. There's $200 million needs to be in there at the end of June, right? Well, and then
Mr. Chairman, in the March too. In the March 2019 forecast, that was increased to $300 million.
That's what I meant. There's another $100 million. So yeah, so we're that needs to be here. I mean, like you said, and then the any balance over that going forward, we won't know until they're finished up transferring it around. So that could be sometime this fall, but it won't be July, will it?
Well, Mr.
There
Chairman,
won't be $450 million going in July, will there?
No, yes, there will, Mr. Chairman, or whatever that amount ends up being after May investment returns are realized. So I can speak to that if you'd like, Mr. Chairman. It's kind of the next item on the agenda.
Yeah, I see that. Why don't we, Dave?
Okay.
We're getting into I think we understand.
Thank you very much.
This is at. And then, go ahead,
okay. Joe. Mr. Chairman, so to address that next item on the agenda, and this discussion did take place with Dave and the Retirement Investment Office staff with Connie as well, as we talked about how that mechanically how that transfer will work, because the Constitution requires that the transfer take place at the end of the biennium. So it has to be applied to the current 2017-19 biennium. So can't really wait for audited financial statements that might not be available for a following quarter. There has to be a determination made in this biennium what that amount will be. And so there's a period of at least 30 days that it takes to prepare those financial statements, identify in each of the funds that are managed what those realized earnings are that meet that statutory definition. So in that discussion, it seemed like the only feasible, the only logical approach to do that was to have a cutoff, and in this case, May 31st, and say, as of that date, we'll determine what those realized earnings are that meet that statutory definition. That'll take at least 30 days. That'll push us sometime into July. But like I said, the accounting system for the state is open for this end of the biennium period. Usually it closes on about the 10th of the month, but for this last month of the biennium, it's open until the 26th or 7th of the month. So that amount of realized earnings will be known and available sometime in that July timeframe, and then that transfer can be made. And so for this first period, there's actually going to be 23 months of realized earnings from July 1st to the end of May. And then in every subsequent biennium, there'll be a 24-month period, which would be June 1st from the prior biennium through May 31st of that biennium, and that would be the period where realized earnings would be identified and then transferred to the general fund.
Well, I know we've had this discussion ever since read the constitutional measure that it wasn't set up for this. You know, we should have either had the cutoff earlier or later, but that's neither here nor there. So, okay. So we are going to use an estimate then on, and then when you get through with it, it'll get transferred back into the June account.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it'll be a known amount. It'll be an actual, but it'll be through May instead of through the end of June.
That's
just important. So that way we can tie to our financial statements that we publish the $454 million or thereabouts for the 23 months ended May 31st, 2019.
Well, you might as well continue, Joe, because there will be a sizable going into the budget stabilization fund, because anything over $65 million will go into the budget stabilization fund.
Right, Mr. Chairman, with overage in the general fund revenue collections compared to the March 2019 forecast through the end of May, that's about $50 million. This additional transfer from legacy earnings could be another 150, and so it's possible that we'll have a transfer of around 600 million that would go or 500 million that would go into the budget stabilization fund and push that balance up to a little over 600 million.
Okay, committee, any other questions?
Joe.
Well, I think we've hit the 941-2. Is there any Comments from the audience, interested persons? Okay. Now we'll go to the 955 one. I think we've kind of had a like I said, on the investment board, I'll either contact Joe or Jerry, and you know, and if maybe we'll, maybe we should just work it that way, where we have a legislator and the agency person take in, and then kind of rotate through the year. Would probably make sense that way and stuff on it. So, but we'll have, this will take care of the, for till the December meeting, because we'll have a meeting in December again. Any other directives or anything? I think we kind of talked about a little bit about the budget stabilization fund. Otherwise, right now, I think this is going to be our first go at transferring earnings. So we'll, I got a feeling that's going to be the next conversation, is going to be how to spend it, is going to be the interesting one. I was bringing up a conversation, I was reading an article the other day, but it was on, I didn't realize Alaska had gone to the point they had, was they basically went through the same conversation we've had here the last year. They eliminated pretty much all their taxes in Alaska as far as what the population pays, and then they decided to vote themselves a dividend on top of it. Well, the state, I know we had a member of the Alaska Fund when we first started this that basically said, I think it was a conference call, but it basically said they can't build a road up there because there's no taxes. Everything was dependent on oil revenue for their income, for the state income too, and when oil dropped off, and it hasn't come back. And I don't know if they, I know this fall or this winter, they changed some of the language here a few years ago that took the residency requirement, because it was a prorated on residency. Well, they took that away. So basically, they were getting $3,500 every man, woman, and child. It's per person. It isn't per household or anything. And there was a proposal, the governor, to double it, to go to $7,000. I think that passed, but they were going to vote on income tax now up there. They'd just soon keep the dividend, then they'd just soon tax themselves. So this, you know, and I think that's going to be one of the challenges we're going to have here, is we can eliminate, you know, in theory, if we do this right, we could eliminate all the taxes, but then the responsibility becomes who's responsible, you know, and if it's not enough, then the dividends could show up. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but history is showing that it doesn't end well in areas that you don't, there's unintended consequences, I guess, with it. And we want to make sure that we do this right, but we want to make sure that we're responsible and that the population that's knowledgeable about what is happening with it too. So, because this thing, if we do this right, it's been a conversation in this committee, you know, about reinvesting, you know, the earnings too and stuff, and growing it faster. We've seen those conversations. There was a proposal this winter about doing that and growing it faster on it, but it becomes that balance. And so I think that's what, you know, we're looking at the investment and how to invest. There's other committees are going to look at how the spending part goes and how we're going to do that. So with that, any other comments, committee? Okay, it's been moved and we're adjourned.